Hello, ladies and gentlemen. This is Dan Trotter, Pretty Good Bible Studies. I am now going to cover Ezekiel chapter 25, which I will entitle Prophecies Against Ammon, Moab, Edom, and Philistia. Now, when was this prophecy given? Probably in 586. Precept Austin, my source for dates, has 587, but they're using the older system of dating. I prefer the system that is a year later, 586. And how did they get that date? I'm sure it's because Ezekiel is talking about what had happened to Jerusalem as if it's history and not prophecy, although some people dispute that. The last prophecy in chapter 24 was in 588. That was the year that Nebuchadnezzar II started the siege of Jerusalem. And now we are all the way down into 586 when the siege has taken place. So we begin now by reading Ezekiel 25 verses 1 through 7. The word of the Lord came to me, Son of man, set your face against the Ammonites and prophesy against them. Say to them, hear the word of the sovereign Lord. This is what the sovereign Lord says. Because you said, aha, over my sanctuary when it was desecrated, and over the land of Israel when it was laid waste, and over the people of Judah when they went into exile. Therefore, I am going to give you to the people of the east as a possession. They will set up their camps and pitch their tents among you. They will eat your fruit and drink your milk. I will turn Rabbah into a pasture for camels and Ammon into a resting place for sheep. Then you will know that I am the Lord, for this is what the sovereign Lord says. Because you have clapped your hands and stamped your feet, rejoicing with all the malice of your heart against the land of Israel, therefore I will stretch out my hand against you and give you as plunder to the nations. I will cut you off from the nations and exterminate you from the countries. I will destroy you, and you will know that I am the Lord. So Yahweh starts out with Ammon first. Now, there are going to be four countries that are blasted by Yahweh in this chapter. I'm going to briefly introduce you to them by looking at a map of Israel and describing the enemies of Israel and showing you how they are surrounding Israel. We all know where the Mediterranean Sea is and the Sea of Galilee and the Dead Sea is, so we will use those geographical places as markers. Take the Dead Sea first. If you go directly to the western edge of the Dead Sea, we have the Kingdom of Judah. Jerusalem is its capital at the north. That's almost directly from the northern tip to the southern tip of the Dead Sea. As you move east, as you move west toward the Mediterranean Sea, you don't quite get there because you end up with Philistia on the coast of the Mediterranean Sea in a narrow strip. So the western boundary of Judah is Philistia, with its cities of Gaza, Ashkelon, and Ashdod, and Gath and Ekron. Now, if you go directly to the east of the Dead Sea, that's the kingdom of Moab, almost exactly. And if you go south of Judah, south of the Dead Sea, and south of Moab, the kingdom of Edom, which straddles the Araba Valley, which runs from the southern tip of the Dead Sea down to the northern tip of the Red Sea, the Gulf of Aqaba, from the Dead to the Red Sea, that's the kingdom of Edom. All right, if you go back to Judah and you look at the northern tip of Judah, go toward the Mediterranean Sea, you'll be at the northern tip of Philistia, and then go up the coast all the way to the little horn that sticks out into the Mediterranean Sea where Carmel is. That is the western coast of the northern kingdom of Israel with its capital in Samaria. Now, that horn there at Mount Carmel, present-day Haifa, if you go due east, you hit the Sea of Galilee. Now, there's a little projecting horn of northern Israel that goes up north to Lake Hula and just beyond to the city of Dan or the tribe of Dan. And that is the northern tip of the kingdom of Israel. And if you go east from there, you're at the northern edge of the kingdom of Syria, of Aram, the capital of which is Damascus. So if you run a line down from the east of the tribe of Dan, the east of Lake Hula, the east of the Sea of Galilee, curve it back to the west till you hit to the Jordan River, and go down maybe a third of the way to the Dead Sea. That's Aram, and that's the beginning of the kingdom of Ammon. And so Ammon runs from south of Syria all the way down to the northern tip of the Red Sea on the eastern side of the Jordan River. So just think Jordan River, go to the east, that's the kingdom of Ammon, and then south of Ammon is Moab, which runs down the eastern coast of the Dead Sea all the way to Edom. Now, we went around in a clockwise fashion. We see how Israel is totally surrounded by enemies, and Ezekiel prophesies against each one of them individually. Now, I know you can't see the map. It would be good to go to Wikipedia, look up Moab. They've got a great map there. You can see all of these kingdoms. It really helps to know where they are. So we start now in verse 1. The word of the Lord came to me. Verse 2, son of man. Why does God call Ezekiel son of man? Two possibilities. One, he wants to show that Ezekiel is just a man. He has the characteristics of a man, and therefore he needs to be humble. He's finite like a man. But I don't think that's the reason. I think the reason is God wants to set up a type. Ezekiel is a type of the antitype, who is Jesus, who called himself the Son of Man all the way through the Gospels. Jesus got that from Daniel 7:14 when the Son of Man went up to the Ancient of Days and inherited a kingdom. Jesus was trying to show that he was the Messiah because all the Jews knew that Son of Man to be the Messiah. And God knew that was going to happen, and therefore he called Ezekiel, the Son of Man, also to set up a type. Why? Because Ezekiel is preaching against the rebellious house of Israel, and Ezekiel is prophesying and telling about the destruction of Jerusalem in 586 BC. Likewise, Jesus is preaching against the rebellious house of Israel and was prophesying against the destruction of Jerusalem in AD 70. Son of Man, set your face against the Ammonites. As John Gill says, the Ammonites were the posterity of Lot, implacable enemies of the Jews who hated their religion and envied their wealth and happiness. Albert Barnes says the four nations most connected with one another by geographical position were mentioned in this chapter, I've already mentioned them once. I'll mention them again. Ammon, Moab, Edom, and Philistia. If you start with Adam to the east of the Jordan River, go south, you hit Moab, go south of there, you hit Edom, and then come back north. On the other side of the Dead Sea, on the Mediterranean coast, you get Philistia. So we're going in a clockwise fashion. Barnes says these four nations are most closely connected with one another by geographical position, as I just said, and by contact, they're contiguous with each other, mostly. They are addressed in a few brief sentences, concluding with the same refrain, "You shall know that I am the Lord." And of course, what's going to give them that knowledge of Yahweh is the fact that they're going to get whopped, judged by Yahweh. Now, Jeremiah had actually prophesied of three of these countries, all but Philistia, in Jeremiah 27, 1-8. Jeremiah had prophesied that they were going to be whacked. Starting at verse 1, Jeremiah 27, at the beginning of the reign of Zedekiah, son of Josiah, king of Judah, this word came to Jeremiah from the Lord. This is what the Lord said to me, make chains and yoke bars for yourself and put them on your neck. Send word to the king of Edom, the king of Moab, the king of the Ammonites, that's three of the nations mentioned in Ezekiel 25, the king of Tyre. Now, Tyre's not mentioned in Ezekiel 25, but Tyre is mentioned in chapters 26 and 27. And the king of Sidon, which is right to the north of Tyre, through messengers who are coming to Zedekiah, king of Judah and Jerusalem. Command them to go to their masters, saying, this is what the Lord of hosts, the God of Israel, says. This is what you must say to your masters. By my great strength and outstretched arm, I made the earth and the people and animals on the face of the earth. I give it to anyone I please. So now I have placed all these lands under the authority of my servant Nebuchadnezzar, king of Babylon. Now what this means, of course, is that Nebuchadnezzar, on his way to, or after he has conquered Jerusalem, he's going to conquer these other lands too, as we'll see as we get on into the chapter. Jeremiah prophesied of it. Jeremiah continues, I've even given Nebuchadnezzar the wild animals to serve him. All nations will serve him, his son and his grandson, until the time for his own land comes. That would be 539 when Cyrus the Great got him. And then many nations and great kings will enslave him. That would be Persia under Cyrus the Great. As for the nation and kingdom that does not serve Nebuchadnezzar, king of Babylon, and does not place its neck under the yoke of the king of Babylon, that nation I will punish by sword, famine, and plague. This is the Lord's declaration, until through him I have destroyed it. So Jeremiah's predicted it, and Ezekiel is telling about it now. Actually, Ezekiel is predicting it too, because the destruction of these nations didn't happen until after 586, until after Jerusalem was destroyed. Now, Ezekiel is told to prophesy against the four nations. In verse 2, one wonders how the nations heard about it, since Ezekiel is in Babylon at the time that he made this prophecy. Well, ambassadors from Babylon to the Ammonites might have carried Ezekiel's prophecy along with them. I can imagine they would be happy about what Ezekiel said, that Ammon is going down. or maybe some business people, some merchants might have traveled from Babylon to Ammon, or maybe Ezekiel sent a letter to Ammon, but I'm sure Ammon heard about Isaiah's prophecy. Now in verse 3 of Ezekiel 25, God says, "Hear the word of the Sovereign Lord." That Sovereign Lord is a title that he uses of himself all the way through Ezekiel, because he can control the fate of nations, and that's what he's talking about now, the fate of nations. In this case, Ammon. God says, "Because you said, aha," in other words, you are rejoicing when my sanctuary, the temple, was destroyed in 586, and you said, aha, over the land of Israel when it was laid waste. So this is history here, it's not prophecy, although I must say that some people say it's prophecy. John Gill did. Adam Clark denies that. He says the prophecy was given after the destruction of Jerusalem. Barnes says, quote, "This prophecy was delivered immediately after the capture of the city by Nebuchadnezzar, and so is later in point of time than some of the prophecies that follow it." So we'll see some backing up chronologically as we proceed to Ezekiel, but this is history, I'm sure. And apparently Ammon was very happy when the Babylonians came in and whacked Jerusalem and burned it to the ground. Their joy is not going to last very long. And so Ezekiel is saying, okay, you're laughing about Jerusalem going down. You are going to be given, in verse 4, to the people of the east, that's the Babylonians, as a possession. Some people say the peoples of the east are nomad tribes in service of Babylon. No, I don't think so. I think it's Babylon's going to take control of Ammon. Now, when did this happen? According to Josephus, Babylon destroyed Ammon 5 years after the destruction of Jerusalem. I think this is a firm date. 586 minus 5 gives you 581. I'm going to quote not Josephus, but Oded Lipschitz, who seems to be an authority on this. He wrote an article that was published in the Bulletin of the American Schools of Oriental Research of the University of Chicago, and these are the big dogs in ancient Near Eastern history, always have been. This is what Oded Lipschitz says. During the Babylonian expedition of 582/581, again, the two dates are not quite the same because people use different dating systems. During the Babylonian expedition of 582-581 BC, the invading army destroyed the fortified cities near the kingdom's northwestern border and on the main road to the capital, and might have also hit Rabbath Ammon. That's the capital city of Ammon. All right, so Ezekiel's prophecy, Jeremiah's prophecy too, for that matter, carried out, fulfilled, 581 B.C. Now in verse 5, Yahweh says, "I will turn Rabbah," that's Rabbath Ammon, "into a pasture for camels." Now, Rabbath Ammon is a city we need to know about. It's still around. It's the capital of present-day Jordan. Ammon, Jordan, is right to the east of the Jordan River from Israel. If you look at Jericho and go about 40 miles east of Jericho across the Jordan River, that's where Rabbath Ammon is. It's about, I don't know what, 60, it might, excuse me, about, it's about 80 miles east of Jerusalem on a line that stretches from Jerusalem to Rabbath Ammon. The Dead Sea's northern tip is right on that line. So that's what we're talking about here. It's a very famous city. Rabbah means the great, so the city's name, Rabbath Ammon, it means that it is the great city, the capital city of Ammon. Jameson Fawcett Brown says, quote, the word, quote, meaning the great, Ammon's metropolis. Under the Ptolemies, it was rebuilt under the name Philadelphia. The ruins are called Ammon now. This is in the 19th century when Jameson Fawcett Brown were writing. There is no dwelling inhabited. In other words, it was a pasture land in the 1800s. However, now the capital city of Jordan is there, Ammon. So it came back. But when the Babylonians whacked it, it came, as verse 5 tells us, a place of camels. Pastures for the camels. One of my commentators says that the houses and even the palaces would be turned into stables for the camels there. I don't know. The text says pastures. That doesn't sound like stables to me. But basically, Rabbath Ammon would be wiped out. Now, Rabbath Ammon could have been wiped out in 586 when Nebuchadnezzar was on the march against Jerusalem. And if a certain lot had been decided a different way, the people of Ammon might not have been so joyous over what was going to happen to Jerusalem. Nebuchadnezzar, in 586, had stopped on the way to Jerusalem to decide whether to go to Jerusalem or Rabbath Ammon first. Which way am I going to go? We read in Ezekiel 21:20, "Mark out a road that the sword can take to Rabbah of the Ammonites and to Judah into fortified Jerusalem." Ezekiel was told on his clay tablet to to pick a point right before the road branched and the Babylonians could decide whether to go to the east and hit Ramoth Ammon first, to go to the west and hit Jerusalem. In verse 23 of Ezekiel 21, and apparently the Babylonians had taken some kind of a divination and had decided to go to Jerusalem instead of Ramoth Ammon. So the Ammonites were lucky in 586, but 581, they got what was coming to them. Now in verse 7, Yahweh says he will stretch out his hand and give the Ammonites as plunder to the nations. Why plural? Why nations? That's because Babylon had a lot of constituent nations within the empire. That term is used a lot. At the end of verse 7, Yahweh says, I will cut you off from the nations, exterminate you from the countries. All the other nations surrounding Ammon are going to be separated from Ammon because Ammon is going to be whacked. I will destroy you, and you will know that I am the Lord. The Babylonians did that, 581. In fact, the Ammonites disappear from history forever after Babylon destroyed them in that year. We go now to Ezekiel 25, verses 8 through 11. We are now going to move from Ammon, and now we're going to go to Moab and Edom. Starting in verse 8, this is what the Sovereign Lord says. Because Moab and Seir is Edom. Seir is the mountain range that runs from north to south on the eastern edge of the Dead Sea. And so it's used as a metonymy part for the whole nation of Edom. Because Moab and Seir said, look, the house of Judah has become like all the other nations. Therefore, I will expose the flank of Moab, beginning at its frontier towns, Beth Jeshimoth, Baal Meon, and Kiriathaim, the glory of that land. I will give Moab along with the Ammonites to the people of the east as a possession, so that the Ammonites will not be remembered among the nations. And I will inflict punishment on Moab. Then they will know that I am the Lord. Now concerning Moab and Seir, Moab and Edom, this is what Clark says. It appears that both these, with the Ammonites, had made a league with Zedekiah, as we read in Jeremiah 27:3. They didn't keep that league. Moab and Edom did not keep their agreement with Zedekiah. And it is supposed that they even joined with the Chaldeans, with the Babylonians. Well, this is a little bit of speculation. So let's look at Jeremiah 27:3. This is Yahweh speaking through Jeremiah. And Jeremiah is supposed to speak to the kings of Edom, Moab, and the Ammonites, as well as the king of Tyre and the king of Sidon, supposed to send word to them. Now, the fact that those messengers were in Jerusalem has led people to speculate that they were trying to make a deal with Zedekiah, king of Jerusalem, against the Babylonians because they were all pressured by Babylon, obviously. But they didn't keep that deal. They didn't help the Israelites out. In fact, they were laughing. Some of them, Ammonites, were laughing when the Babylonians came in and wiped out Jerusalem. Now, I must say that that verse 3 in Jeremiah 27 doesn't actually say that there was an alliance between these pagan nations and Jerusalem, so I don't know. I think that's speculative. This alliance with the pagan nations would have taken place somewhere around 597, the time when Ezekiel went to Babylon. At any rate, Moab and Edom have said in verse 8, look, the house of Judah has become like all the other nations. How has Judah become like all the other nations? Because all the other nations were saying, what kind of a God is Yahweh? Can't even protect his own people. Now Judah is gone, wiped out. So their God isn't worth anything any more than any other defeated nation's God is worth anything. Well, because of that, because the Moabites and the Edomites were saying those bad things about Yahweh, verse 9, therefore I will expose the flank of Moab. In other words, I'm going to come against the border of Moab. Beginning at its frontier towns, three frontier towns are mentioned. I'll look at the map real quick and show you where they are. Remember, Moab basically runs to the eastern boundary of the Dead Sea from north to south, from the northern tip of the Dead Sea to the southern tip of the Dead Sea. At the very tip of the Dead Sea, in the plain there, next to the Jordan River, just east of it, is Beth Jeshimoth. And then if you go further east, get past the mountain range there, go south, you're still somewhat near the northern edge of the Dead Sea, but you're now to the east of the mountains there, are the two towns, Kiriathaim and Beth Baal Meon. Those are the three towns that are mentioned. They're right at the north tip of Moab, and that's why they're called frontier towns in verse 9. And those three towns are called the glory of that land. That means they're the most wealthy cities in Moab. Their glory will be short-lived, of course. Verse 10, Yahweh says, I will give Moab along with the Ammonites to the people of the east. That's the Babylonians as a possession. So the Ammonites are going to belong to Babylon, so will Moab. So that the Ammonites will not be remembered among the nations, and I will inflict punishment on Moab. That's because of the Babylonians. Then they will know that I am the Lord. Sometimes it takes total destruction before hard-hearted people realize that God is God. You don't mess with him. And by the way, those three towns that were the glory of Moab, they were wealthy. One of my commentators says that Moab was actually wealthier than Ammon was. We go down to Ezekiel 25, verses 12 through 14. This is what the Sovereign Lord says. Because Edom took revenge on the house of Judah, now we've gone from Ammon to Moab and Edom, and now we're going to Edom by Edom's self. Ezekiel 25, verse 12, this is what the Sovereign Lord says, because Edom took revenge on the house of Judah and became very guilty by doing so. Therefore, this is what the Sovereign Lord says. I will stretch out my hand against Edom and kill its men and their animals. I will lay it waste, and from Teman to Dedan, they will fall by the sword. I will take vengeance on Edom by the hand of my people Israel, and they will deal with Edom in accordance with my anger and my wrath. They will know my vengeance, declares the Sovereign Lord. Now, Edom is an historical enemy of Israel. The Edomites bore an old grudge against the Jews. Remember that the Edomites' ancestor Esau had his birthright snookered from him by the Israelites' ancestor Jacob. And then the Edomites were made tributaries to Israel in David's time. And then Amaziah in 796-767 severely chastised the Edomites. I won't read you the passages. David, of course, was 1010 to 970. So all the way through the history of Israel, the Edomites were there as enemies. And if you go all the way back to the Exodus, the route of the Israelites into the Promised Land was blocked by the Edomites, who control the south down there, right south of the Negev Desert. And at first, at least, the Edomites refused to let the Israelites through. So let's read that, Numbers 20, verses 18 through 21. But Edom answered him, answered Moses, you must not travel through our land, or we will come out and confront you with a sword. We will go on the main road, the Israelites replied to them, and if we or our herds drink your water, we will pay its price. There will be no problem, only let us travel through on foot. Yet Edom insisted, you must not travel through. And they came out to confront them with a large force of heavily armed people. Edom refused to allow Israel to travel through their territory, and Israel turned away from them. Now, it's true the Edomites later changed their mind. We read in Deuteronomy 2, 26-29, Moses is relating what had happened to the king of Sihon, and Moses says this, so I sent messages with an offer of peace to Sihon, king of Heshbon, from the wilderness of Kedemoth, saying, let us travel through your land. We will keep strictly to the highway. We will not turn to the right or the left. Now, remember, Moses is talking to Sihon, who is another king. He's an Amorite king of Heshbon, which is right at the northern tip of Moab. He's not talking about Edom right now. And he says the same thing. We won't turn to the right or to the left. We'll buy our food. We'll buy our water. Just let us travel through on foot. Verse 29, just as the descendants of Esau who live in Seir did for us. So there in verse 29, Moses says, the Edomites let us through. Well, how do you reconcile it? Well, I think that the way you reconcile it is that when the Israelites first encountered Edom, they were to the west of the range of mountains, Mount Seir, and those mountains provided a perfect defensive barrier for the Edomites. They could hide in the mountain passes, and the Jews were not able to get through those passes. But then the Jews went to the south and to the east, got through Mount Seir, or they got through Mount Seir somewhere, and on the eastern side of the Seir mountain range, you don't have steep cliffs. You just have a tableland as the mountains slope gently down. And so once they got there, the Edomites were not able to defend against the marching Israelites, and so they changed their mind and said, sure, come on through. This is Colin Delitzsch's solution to that apparent contradiction, and I like it. All right, so we have gone through a lot of occasions when Edom opposed Israel. Verse 12 says, because Edom took revenge on the house of Judah. I'm just taking revenge as referring to their hostile attitude toward the Jews. They became very guilty by doing that, verse 12 says. And so God says, now I'm going to get you. Verse 13, I will stretch out my hand against Edom and kill its men and the animals. I will lay it waste. And from Teman to Dedan. Now, let's look at the map here. The best I could do for Teman was BibleAtlas.org. If you look at that salt plain right to the south of the southern tip of the Dead Sea and go east and a little bit south across the mountain range there, Mount Seir, BibleAtlas.org has Teman there, but with a question mark. So we don't know. So it's somewhere right to the south of the Dead Sea. A little bit north of where BibleAtlas.org has Teman is Selah, which is Petra. We know where that is. That's in present-day Jordan. Bozrah is right south of Petra. Those are the northern cities of Edom, right as you get toward the southern tip of the Dead Sea where Sodom and Gomorrah used to be. So Teman is a little bit further south of the southern tip of the Dead Sea, whereas Dedan is even further south, a lot further south. You keep going south down the road, the highway that's just to the east of the Seir mountain range. You get down to Eilat at the tip of the Gulf of Aqaba, and then you keep going to the east of the mountain range, which continues, and then you get to the eastern coast of the Red Sea, past the Gulf of Aqaba, all the way down, I don't know how many miles, looks like about 200 miles or so, to Dedan. So basically what God is saying here, go from the north, Teman, to the south, Dedan, from the north to the south. That's way down south there. I guess Edom went that far south, although who knows, it's desert area. I've actually been between Petra and Eilat, which runs right through the area that Teman is supposed to be in. It looks like you're on Mars. That Seir mountain range just goes on and on and on, all the way down to Eilat. I spent the night in Eilat with my wife, and you look out and you look on the Saudi Arabian side and you see that same mountain range. It's a desolate area. It's not a land of milk and honey, to say the least. But at any rate, they're going to get wiped out. Edom is going to get wiped out by God. Verse 14, I will take vengeance on Edom by the hand of my people Israel. Ah, now, Ammon got wiped out by Babylon. Edom is said to be wiped out by the hand of my people Israel. Now, there's a problem there. And in fact, there's a split of opinion as to exactly who wiped out Edom. It would be so easy to say Babylon got Edom in 591, just like they got Ammon. But it says they're going to be wiped out by the hand of my people Israel. So most commentators say that the downfall of Edom came during the time of the Maccabees, who were Jews, of course. That would refer to the hand of my people Israel. The time of the Maccabees was between 167 to 134. I got that date from Wikipedia. Now, this vengeance against Edom was fulfilled in the times of the Maccabees, according to John Gill, Adam Clark, Jameson Fawcett and Brown, Matthew Henry, and Joseph Benson. And I suspect a lot of other commentators if I consulted them. When did Edom go down? When Hyrcanus, the Maccabean, took the cities of the Edomites and subdued them and forced the Edomites to become Jews. Josephus tells about that in his Antiquities of the Jews. Ellicott says that this prophecy was fulfilled when the Edomites were conquered by John Hyrcanus and compelled them to submit to circumcision as a mark of absorption into the Jewish people. Ellicott's following Josephus there. Pulpit commentator also follows Josephus. That commentary says the words received a fulfillment in the conquest of Edom by John Hyrcanus, who compelled its people to receive circumcision. Okay, that's the majority opinion. There are some, however, who say that the destruction of Edom being referred to by Ezekiel was that destruction which came from Babylon in 591. Now, this view has got to deal with that phrase, the destruction comes at the hand of my people Israel, and Babylon is not my people Israel. Well, that phrase, the hand of my people Israel, would have to be taken in some sense like this, the hand that judged my people Israel. The hand of my people Israel is the hand belonging to Israel in the sense that the hand whacked Israel. That, again, is a translation issue. Here's what Matthew Poole says. Some therefore interpret by the hand, by the same hand that I used in punishing my people Israel. Well, whether it was Babylon, whether it was Israel, the Edomites bit the dust. Well, let's finish with the history of Edom. After the Maccabees absorbed the Edomites into the Jewish race by forcing them to be circumcised, somewhere between 167 and 134, then Mount Seir was deserted by the Edomites, that mountain range And then the Nabataeans, an Arabian tribe, moved in. That was somewhere in the 4th, 2nd century B.C. They built Petra, which is still there. You need to go see it before you die. United Nations landmark. And then Islam came in and wiped out the Nabataeans somewhere between 629 and 632 A.D. Barnes says that this final wiping out of the Nabataeans was the final fulfilling of Ezekiel's prophecy. But I don't think so. The Nabataeans did not really eat them. I think the Maccabeans is who got Edom. All right, we've got Ammon, Moab, and Edom destroyed prophetically. And so now we turn to the Philistines in verses 15 through 17 of Ezekiel 25. This is what the sovereign Lord says. Because the Philistines acted in vengeance and took revenge with malice in their hearts and with ancient hostility sought to destroy Judah, therefore this is what the sovereign Lord says. I am about to stretch out my hand against the Philistines, and I will cut off the Kerethites and destroy those remaining along the coast. I will carry out great vengeance on them and punish them in my wrath. Then they will know that I am the Lord when I take vengeance on them. That's that same refrain. After every nation is judged, then God says, then they will know that I am the Lord. Well, let's look at some of the history of what the Philistines did to the Israelites. The Philistines fought Israel from the Israelites' first settlement in Canaan under Joshua. Now, we need to say where the Philistines are. It's very easy. You look to the southwest corner of Israel along the coast, a little narrow strip down there, right as you're going down to Gaza, getting into Egypt. That's the Philistines. They fought the Israelites when Joshua entered the land, crossed the Jordan River, and after Joshua. Joshua was roughly, 1300s. The dates are extremely dicey when we're talking about when Joshua came, and the judges roughly, 1200 to David's time in 1010, another couple hundred years. They fought Israel all during that time of the judges. Remember Samson? He was fighting the Philistines. And then the Israelites fought the Philistines at the time of Saul. Saul was 1050 to 1010 B.C. Remember David slaying Goliath? Goliath was a Philistine. Now when Goliath was overthrown by David, after that, David comes to the throne in 1010. He lasts till 970. And during that time, David was constantly fighting the Philistines. Let's look at some examples in 1 Samuel 17, 51 through 52. David ran and stood over him. This is Goliath. David grabbed Goliath's sword, the Philistine's sword, pulled it from its sheath, and used it to kill him. Then he cut off his head. When the Philistines saw that the hero was dead, they ran. The men of Israel and Judah rallied, shouting their battle cry, and chased the Philistines to the entrance of the valley and to the gates of Ekron. Ekron was a famous Philistine city. Philistine bodies were strewn all along the Sha'arim road to Gath and Ekron. 2 Samuel 5, 20-21. So David went to Baal-perazim and defeated them there and said, like a bursting flood, the Lord has burst out against my enemies before me. Therefore he named that place the Lord Burst Out. The Philistines abandoned their idols there, and David and his men carried them off. Dropping down to 2 Samuel 5, verse 25. So David did exactly as the Lord commanded him, and David struck down the Philistines all the way from Geba to Gezer. 2 Samuel 8, 1. After this, David defeated the Philistines, subdued them, and took Metheg Ammah from Philistine control. I'm not going to go through all the places and battles and stuff, just to give you an overall feel for how often the Philistines fought the Jews. Well, we're not finished. We proceed now to the time of Ahaz, who ruled from 732 to 716. We're getting a little bit closer to the time of Ezekiel. One of my commentators says the revenge mentioned in verse 15 of Ezekiel 25 is actually referring to this incident in the time of Ahaz. I don't know how you can say that for sure, but let's read it. 2 Chronicles 28, 18. The Philistines also raided the cities of the Judean foothills and the Negev of Judah and captured Beth Shemesh, Ajalon, Gederoth, Soko and its villages, Timnah and its villages, Gimzo and its villages, and they lived there. So Ahaz suffered a little setback from the Philistines, 732 to 716. Now, we can assume that the Philistines also probably said, aha, aha, when Jerusalem went down in 586. We don't know that, but it's a reasonable assumption. But even before that, we have some other kings who were fighting the Philistines. I've already mentioned Ahaz, 732 to 716. Even before Ahaz, we have Uzziah, who ruled between 767 and 740. 2 Chronicles 26:6. Uzziah went out to wage war against the Philistines, and he tore down the wall of Gath, that's one of the five big Philistine cities, the wall of Yabneh, and the wall of Ashdod. Ashdod was another of the big five Philistine cities. Then he built cities in the vicinity of Ashdod and among the Philistines. So Uzziah is fighting the Philistines. And then after Ahaz, Hezekiah fought the Philistines. Between 716 and 687 is Hezekiah's reign. We read in 2 Kings 18:8, Hezekiah, or he, defeated the Philistines as far as Gaza and its borders, from watchtower to fortified city. As you know, Gaza is right there in the Gaza Strip right before you get to Egypt. Now the Philistines, who had malice in their hearts and sought to destroy Judah, are about to get whacked. Verse 16, God says, I'm about to stretch out my hand against the Philistines, and I will cut off the Kerethites. Well, who are the Kerethites? The Kerethites, most probably, were one of the tribes of the Philistines. They were a principal part of the territory of the Philistines. We read about the Kerethites in 1 Samuel 30, verse 14. We raided the south country of the Kerethites, the territory of Judah, and the south country of Caleb, and we burned down Ziklag. Let's talk about David when he was on the run from King Saul, living as a freebooter in the southern desert down there. David says, we raided the south country of the Kerethites. Actually, that's not David's talking. The person who was speaking was an Amalekite slave that David was talking to after David's city of Ziklag was burnt down. Again, that's in the same area of Philistia. In Zephaniah 2:5, woe, inhabitants of the seacoast. Remember, Philistia is on the Mediterranean Sea. Woe, inhabitants of the seacoast, nation of the Kerethites. The word of the Lord is against you, Canaan, land of the Philistines. I will destroy you until there is no one left. So the Kerethites are mentioned in one breath with the Philistines. Might as well say they're like the Chaldeans and the Babylonians. Why make a distinction? Let me give you some learned opinion from Jameson, Fawcett, and Brown about these Kerethites. The name may have been given to a section of the Philistines from their warlike disposition. They excelled in archery, whence David enrolled a bodyguard from them. They sprang from Kaphtor, identified by many with Crete, which was famed for archery, and to which the name Kerethim seems akin. Though in emigration, that's migration, which mostly tended westward, Crete seems more likely to be colonized from Philistia than Philistia from Crete. Well, I don't know about that. A section of Cretans may have settled at Kerethim in South Philistia, while the Philistines as a nation may have come originally from the east. Nobody knows where the Philistines come from. I just say they came from Crete because that's where most of the scholars seem to think they came from. In Genesis 10:14, Jameson, Fawcett, Brown continue, the Philistines are made distinct from the Kaphtorim and are said to come from the Kasluhim, so that the Cherethim were but a part of the Philistines, which 1 Samuel 30, verse 14 confirms. I'll take their word for it. I didn't go check that out. So going back to Ezekiel 25, verse 16, God says, I'm going to cut off the Kerethites. That means kill them. Destroy those remaining along the coast. That's the Mediterranean coast, of course. The Philistines were sea peoples. They loved the coast. Verse 17, the last verse of Ezekiel 25, God says, I will carry out great vengeance on the Philistines. Well, now, when did he do it? Here's some options as to when God destroyed the Philistines. It could have been when Kings David, Uzziah, and Hezekiah, remember all those verses I just read you, they were constantly fighting the Philistines. That could have been when God took care of the Philistines. Poole seems to agree with that. He says, quote, this verse is a confirmation of all spoken against the Philistines, and is in all the particulars explained in what went before. In other words, verse 17, the vengeance that God's taken on the Philistines came from David, Uzziah, and Hezekiah. I think more likely the vengeance that came upon the Philistines came by the hand of Babylon after 586. I'm tempted to say 581. Unfortunately, I didn't nail that down in my notes, but it's after 586 when the Babylonians came. We've already established they got Ammon and Moab in 581. Why not the Philistines? They're right there. One of my commentators says that Nebuchadnezzar overran the cities on the coast on the way to Egypt after besieging Tyre, and Tyre was besieged from 586 to 573. So again, it's in the aftermath of the burning of Jerusalem. Philistia went down. Barnes says this, the Philistines were much reduced by the Assyrians and the Egyptians before the time of this prophecy, But further destruction came upon them in the general ruin of the inhabitants of Canaan, which commenced with the destruction of Jerusalem by Nebuchadnezzar. Commenced, 586, and then the rest of the people of Canaan land got wiped out by the Babylonians. Now, interestingly enough, and I think that's the answer, I think that's when the Philistines were destroyed by God and punished in God's wrath by his vengeance. It happened at the hand of the Babylonians. You know, I just said that one possible option is when this could happen is under the previous kings of David, Uzziah, and Hezekiah, but that's all in the past. This is a prophecy here about what's going to happen in the future. The prophecy was written in 586. So I don't see how Poole, unless I misinterpreted him, I don't see how he can say that the prophecy was fulfilled by past actions under David, Uzziah, and Hezekiah. So I'm going to take it that this prophecy is fulfilled by Babylon in the years after 586. Now, Jeremiah predicted the end of the Philistines in Jeremiah 47, 1 through 7. This is the word of the Lord that came to Jeremiah. Verse 2, this is what the Lord says. Look, waters are rising from the north. That would be the Babylonians. They came from the north because they couldn't cross the desert to go from east to west. Waters are rising from the north and becoming an overflowing wadi. Wadi is a dry stream bed. They will overflow the land and everything in it, the cities and their inhabitants. The people will cry out, and every inhabitant of the land will wail at the sound of the stomping hooves of his stallions, the rumbling of his chariots, and the clatter of their wheels. Fathers will not turn back for their sons, because they will be utterly helpless on account of the day that is coming to destroy all the Philistines, and also to cut off from Tyre and Sidon every remaining ally. Indeed, the Lord is about to destroy the Philistines, the remnant of the islands of Kaphtor, which many people think is Crete. Baldness is coming to Gaza, that's one of the Philistine cities. Ashkelon, another one of the Philistine cities, will become silent, a remnant of their valley. How long will you gash yourself, O sword of the Lord? How long will you be restless? Go back to your sheath, be still, be silent. How can it rest when the Lord has given it a command? He has assigned it against Ashkelon and the shore of the sea. Pretty dramatic prophecy against the Philistines. So, ladies and gentlemen, doom on the surrounding nations of Israel has been pronounced prophetically by Ezekiel. Now, Ezekiel has spent a lot of time prophesying against Jerusalem and its sin, but that doesn't mean that the agents of God's wrath, these pagan nations, Ammon, Moab, Edom, and Philistia, are any better than Israel was, because God's going to wipe them out too. He's going to use the Babylonians to do it. And if we think that the Babylonians are any more holy because they won, well, God's going to wipe out the Babylonians too. He did that in 539 with Persia and Cyrus the Great. So we see all of this as an example of God's sovereignty, the sovereign God, as he is constantly entitled through these chapters of Ezekiel. He's sovereign, he judges, he delivers the innocent, and punishes the wicked. So on that somber note, we have finished Ezekiel chapter 25, and we are now prepared in our next audio to go to Ezekiel 26, which I will entitle A Prophecy Against Tyre. So I hope to see you in our next audio, and I hope you enjoyed this one.